Its current state on WKAR from 1970 to 1978, our next guest served as president of Michigan State University. Clifton R. Wharton Jr.'s arrival in East Lansing made him the first African-American president of a major U.S. university, but it was only one memorable stop amid an eventful career of firsts. After MSU, Dr. Wharton became the first black CEO of a Fortune 500 company, TIAA Cref. Now, Dr. Wharton's written an account of his eventful career, Privilege and Prejudice, The Life of a Black Pioneer. It recounts all the chapters of Wharton's life from his unique perspective as a child of privilege who nevertheless faced racial discrimination. I first asked Dr. Wharton if there was a period during his 89 years when he felt especially discriminated against.
Well, I think that's a little difficult to respond to because during the time when I came, after I came back to the United States when I was a youngster, it was something that was there fairly quite frequently all the way through. And most of my time, and most of my life.
Race is still an extremely relevant topic in this country, often painfully relevant. In the aftermath of Ferguson and the Charleston massacre and other incidents, what do you make of the current atmosphere?
Well, if you would like me to do something like that, it would take take about two or three books. But let me point out that my book is basically a personal history which covers a period well before Ferguson, okay? And it's an attempt to describe what the problems were that I encountered and how I overcame them and what was the nature of the discriminations or racism that I experienced. And the situation then was different than it is today. It's even different than it was for my father. For example, my father was the first black to pass the U.S. Foreign Service exam. Now, he did that in 1923, and at that time, when he did that, they had just created the Foreign Service Institute, which was the place where those who had passed the exam would be able to learn what it was like to be a diplomat. Now, my father, after he passed the exam, the State Department was flummoxed because it was segregated in Washington at that time, so they would not let him attend the Foreign Service Institute. That was discrimination. And so what they decided was, they said, we will give you your diploma that you have actually taken the course and sent you off to your first post. Now, that was discrimination in his day, okay? Each time, each generation, I believe, has experienced discrimination or racism at various times. My first exposure to racism was when I came back to the United States with my father from a post overseas. We had home leave, and my mother took me and had me go into a school, in a public school, for a period of time. Now, I had been tutored by my mother overseas with a correspondence course. And, of course, I had been taught by my mother to read very early when I was very young. And the teacher of my class realized that I could read extremely well, better than all the students in my class in the fourth grade. And so what happened was, whenever another student in the class could not have made a mistake reading, the teacher would call upon me, trying to make me feel at ease with my classmates, and asked me to correct the student and to read the words in turn I had read. So I did. Now, at the recess, when I went outside, the young man who I had corrected came up to me, and he said, you think you're very smart, but you're just an N-word. And I didn't know what that meant. Now, keep in mind that it was my first day at the public school in Boston, and before I had gone to school, my mother had said to me, you may hear words which you've never heard before, and I don't want you to use those words until you come home and check them with me. And my mother reports that when I came home that first day, I had every profane word you could imagine. And she would say to me, no, don't use that word. No, don't use that word. And I said to her, what about the word screw? And she said, do you mean like with wood? I said, I don't think so. She said, well, don't use that word either. And then I told her, there was a student there who called me a nigger. And I said, what is that? And my mother said, Clifton, she said, I want you to realize that that is the way in which other people sometimes will try to put you in a negative light, in a box. I want you to be proud of the fact that you are a Negro and proud of everything you are and who you are, but never let the person put you in that box of a negativism. That was my first exposure to racism. Mm.
You told Judy Woodruff on PBS that you are especially disturbed today by what you view as reduced opportunities for minorities to get a good education. What needs...
Well, absolutely. What? And one of the things which disturbs me the most is that the situation, I believe, in certain cases, has become very extreme. One of the points that I frequently make is that there was a study which was done, and I quote from Britt Kerwin, who is one of my colleagues, the Chancellor of the University of Maryland, and he pointed out that if you are in the top quartile of income in the United States, your children have an 85% chance of going to college. If you are in the bottom quartile of income in the United States, your children have an 8% chance of going to college. Now, I think that that is an absolutely horrific problem in the loss of human capital. Those are individuals who could have the opportunity to go to college and be able to make a contribution to the United States, and they are being denied that by a whole host of forces and factors that are preventing them from being able to do that. There has been an increase in the rate of enrollment of minorities in the United States, but nothing like what it could be and should be in terms of just the national interest and building of the national human capital. Never mind about the morality of it. It's really a horrific thing to have that happen to that segment of our society.
We are talking with MSU President Emeritus Clifton Wharton Jr., whose new memoir is titled Privilege and Prejudice, The Life of a Black Pioneer. Let's look on the brighter side for just a moment and ask you when in your life you felt most blessed. Is it possible to answer that question?
No, because in terms of the way I have proceeded, keep in mind, you see, one of the things that very interesting is that, in retrospect, I pioneered in a number of ways. For example, when I went to the School of Advanced International Studies to study for my master's degree, I was the first black at that school, and Washington was segregated in that time. Okay, so I knew that I was black, and I wanted to do very well in the school, and I did. But I was the very first. I can keep going in terms of stories. So when I went to Chicago, I was the first black to get a Ph.D. in economics from the University of Chicago. Did the students think I was black? Yes, they knew it, but there was no particular problem at that particular time. But inevitably, there are instances where you run into racism, and every time that I have pioneered, it's attracted a great deal of attention. Now, it is true that before I got to Michigan State, people used to refer to me as the quiet pioneer because I did so much. But when I got to Michigan State, that hit the headlines all over the country, because of the fact that I had become the first black president of a major white research university. And it was front page of the New York Times with all sorts of people. In fact, they filled the corridor of my office here in New York at the time with TV crews. There were about eight of them out lined up outside to interview me. And it was quite, so I was no longer quiet a pioneer. By that time, it became very public.
I'd like to ask you to read an excerpt from the book. You have, of course, tremendous recollections of Michigan State. What are we about to hear?
Well, I thought that it might be interesting to hear what it was like when my wife and I made our first trip to Michigan State for the our first weekend when we came back to the campus for the Big Ten football game. It was a game against Indiana, and I'll read it from the book. Just before the kickoff, Dolores and I were greeted down onto the field after the band had finished its warm-up numbers. Quote, "Please give a Spartan welcome," boomed the announcer Tim Skubick, "to the next president of Michigan State University, Clifton R. Wharton Jr. and Mrs. Wharton." Holding hands, Dolores and I walked out the 50-yard line to the middle of the field as 77,533 people stood up to cheer for us. The feeling is impossible to describe. MSU lost the game 16-0, but nothing could dampen our excitement of this absolutely memorable moment.
I have to assume that writing a comprehensive memoir like this one enables one to learn more about oneself. Did you learn more about yourself writing this?
Oh, absolutely. Indeed.
What did you learn?
One of them I learned was that much of my life activities had been devoted to the building of human capital. and the critical importance of human capital in the development of societies and nations. And most of my positions, in fact, have had a component of that in them. And I was very surprised to discover that that was one of the major themes of my life careers.
A couple more Michigan State questions for you, Dr. Wharton. Your name will live on here at Michigan State as, of course, the namesake of the Wharton Center. How does that make you feel?
Oh, wonderful, because when that happened, it meant that Michigan State representatives, we were being represented by them permanently there at the campus. And that's a thrill. It really is.
Well, our special guest has been Clifton Wharton, Jr., President Emeritus of MSU and author of the new memoir, Privilege and Prejudice, The Life of a Black Pioneer. A reminder that Dr. Wharton returns to Michigan State next Monday evening. He'll join President Luana Simon in a Worldview Lecture Series discussion at the Cobb Great Hall, Wharton Center, of course, about his legacy at MSU and his various other leadership roles. And there will be more about the book as well. I had the honor of shaking your hand back in March of 1976 when I received my diploma over at the auditorium. It was a special moment then, and this has been very special as well. All the best to you, Dr. Wharton.
Well, I'm glad a great Spartan shook my hand and is now interviewing me.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.